1320 AM and W248DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Locally grown radio, your home for news, talk, and sports from Rudolph to Nakusa. 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. CBS News has confirmed the FBI revoked the security clearances of three agents in connection with the January 6th riot at the Capitol. It was first reported by the New York Times, which says the agents are set to testify before a House panel tomorrow. Montana's governor signs into law a measure to ban TikTok. Governor Greg Gianforte says it's to protect residents' private data and sensitive personal information from being harvested by the Chinese Communist Party. Alan Liska is an intelligence analyst at Recorded Future.
There are real concerns that the Chinese government is working in conjunction with ByteDance to collect user data and potentially use that user data for other purposes.
Montana's law is scheduled to take effect next January 1st and is expected to face legal challenges. Saying they are offended to walk in the halls of Congress with George Santos, a group of Democratic lawmakers moved to force a vote to expel the indicted Republican. CBS's Nicole D'Antonio reports.
Republicans introduced a successful motion to refer the matter to the House Ethics Committee.
I think the George Santos indictment is very serious. I also know in America you're innocent to proven guilty.
That reaction infuriated Democrats who say the Ethics Committee is already investigating. Responding to the move to expel him, the congressman told CBS News Democratic bias is at play.
Democrats are really good at trying to play judge and jury.
Santos has admitted to fabricating parts of his resume, but says the indictment is a witch hunt.
A grand jury indicts the Idaho stabbing death suspect, CBS's Jim Krasula.
Brian Kohlberger was arrested late last year at his parents' home in Pennsylvania and charged with killing four students in a rental home near the University of Idaho campus last November. The 28-year-old was a graduate student studying criminology at nearby Washington State University.
More protests in San Francisco after the city's prosecutor decides to not file charges against a Walgreens security guard for the shooting death of Banco Brown. Details from CBS's Jonathan Vigliotti.
The surveillance footage released by the DA shows Brown with a bag of unpaid items in his hand exiting Walgreens. 33-year-old security guard Michael Irwin Anthony blocks Brown, shoves him, then punches him several times before knocking him to the ground. The fighting continues until Brown grabs the bag and heads to the exit before turning toward Anthony, who then fires a single shot. Brown died in the hospital. Police recovered snacks totaling less than $15.
A woman in Mexico who killed a man while defending herself when he attacked and raped her in 2021 has been sentenced to more than 6 years in prison. Her lawyer calls it discriminatory and vows to appeal. This is CBS News.
Sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Protect your family, your phone, and your furry friends with life, electronic device, and pet health insurance.
For powerful HP tech your business can count on Staples. Staples has great prices on a full range of HP printers, PCs, laptops, and monitors. And now through May 27th, score an extra $50 off all HP laptops regularly priced $599.99 and above with the Staples Connect app. Plus, this week only, the HP OfficeJet 9015E Wireless Color Inkjet Printer is $70 off. For the best deals on the best HP tech for your small business, shop Staples. In-store only. Excludes Chromebooks and clearance.
Two guys drove to work. Neither guy wore a seatbelt. One guy got a ticket. One guy didn't. The same two guys drove home. One guy wore a seatbelt. One guy didn't. One guy made it home. The guy not wearing his seatbelt didn't. Don't risk it. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
Bug Tussle has been your trusted rural internet provider since 2003. Based in Wisconsin and backed by local support, Bug Tussle brings high-speed internet where others can't or won't. At an honest price, without any contracts or data caps, Bug Tussle has the plan that's right for you. Get connected with Bug Tussle today for internet, cellular, and entertainment by calling 877-227-0924. That's 877-227-0924. Or visit btussle.com.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know. Following is a list of upcoming meetings and notices in the listening area for Thursday, May 18th. In Wood County, the assessment roll of the City of Wisconsin Rapids will be completed and open for public examination from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the City Assessor's office and online at the City's website. The assessor will be available in person and by phone or email to answer questions regarding property assessments. The City of Wisconsin Rapids Board of Review will meet next week on the 25th to hear sworn testimony from property owners who object to their assessments. Oral or written intent to file an objection must be filed 48 hours prior to that meeting. In Portage County, the Transportation Coordinating Committee will meet at 1 p.m. at 2700 Week Street in Stevens Point. The Groundwater Citizens Advisory Committee will meet at 7 p.m. at the Portage County Annex in Conference Room 5. I'm Melissa Kay for Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Lows dip down to about 42 overnight under partly cloudy skies, winds out of the southeast 5 to 10 miles per hour. A mix of clouds and sun tomorrow, high of 74. Scattered thunderstorms likely tomorrow night, lows around 50, cloudy. Chance for scattered rain showers Friday with highs in the low 60s, mainly sunny Saturday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 52.
Your hometown news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Pat also confirmed that Robin Voss has virtually no sense of humor.
So it goes. You can always let us know if you are drinking with lawmakers at 844-967-2789.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin! Welcome to the noon hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am your host, Kristen Bry, along with Jane Madnair and Craig Bach on Wednesdays. And we are joined by Craig Gilbert, chronicler of close Wisconsin elections. He is a Luber Center Fellow at Marquette Law, and he is recently, I guess not so recently anymore, retired from being the Washington Bureau Chief and National Political Reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And so this is a guy who has covered a lot of Wisconsin elections, and we're so excited to have you on the show today, Craig. Welcome.
It's great to be with you.
And so I was interested, I mean, I've been wanting to get you on the show, but you still write for Milwaukee Journal Sentinel occasionally, and you had a couple leading up to and then directly after the Supreme Court election in April, but then you also put out one this month, I think a week ago, that basically was titled, What 30 Years of Voting History Tells Us About Wisconsin's Shifting Suburban Vote. And so I wanted to, because you've looked at so many of the numbers for this, and we're sitting in Waukesha right now, and kind of walking through what the suburbs look like these days and where they've come from. And so I guess the first question kind of is, like, what do we actually consider the suburbs of Wisconsin?
So good question. And that's one reason why I wrote the column. I mean, we talk about the suburbs like they're sort of a thing, like they're an entity. There's no definition of a suburb. You know, the government uses sort of different classifications for suburbs. There's so many different ways to kind of slice and dice this. But part of the point of the column is that even though, you know, on the whole, the suburban vote is quite competitive and it's, you know, much more purple than the rural vote, quote unquote, or the urban vote. But that suburban vote includes some really, really red places, including in the Wow counties, and some really, really blue places on the outskirts of Milwaukee and Madison. So you really got to kind of drill down and look at the political diversity of these suburban areas, as well as how they're trending and shifting over time.
Because, like, I think this is always interesting in a place like Wisconsin, where there is, you know, it's unlike our neighbors to the south of Illinois, there is Chicago, and there's a bunch of suburbs around Chicago. And then, like, the rest of the state is like a third, maybe a fourth of the population. But here we have Milwaukee, we have Madison, but then we have a lot of cities that are cities onto themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's like, is Wausau is not a suburb, but it's the same size as Brookfield, and Brookfield is definitely a suburb, right?
Yeah, I mean, I said my definition of a suburb you know, it has to be in a metropolitan area. And I'm looking at, you know, the major metropolitan areas of Wisconsin, because that's where you have sort of the most suburban communities. And so, you know, if you look at, you know, the biggest suburban, you know, swatch in the state is around Milwaukee, but that includes some very different kinds of places. You've also got the suburbs of Madison. You've got suburbs outside Green Bay and Appleton. And then you've got a sort of a small cluster of outer suburbs in western Wisconsin that are kind of on the periphery of Minnesota's Twin Cities. But most of that suburban vote, certainly the biggest chunk, is in the Milwaukee metropolitan area. And then you've got these sort of growing suburbs outside of Madison as well.
And so, as you said, there is, it's basically where the most varied partisan spectrum still survives in Wisconsin, because the metro areas being pretty reliably blue and the rural areas being pretty reliably red. But between the different suburbs, or what we've defined as suburbs, or you did in your article, what are kind of the trends that make certain places still more red versus leaning more blue, as far as either income, industry, like demographics?
So demographics, it's interesting because, you know, demographics tell you a lot, but there's also a limit to what they can tell you. I mean, I always used to marvel at the fact that if you looked at Dane County and Ozaukee County side by side, in some ways they have pretty similar demographics historically. They're both very white. They're both among, you know, at the top of sort of income and education in among the state's counties. And yet for decades, you know, Dane County was pretty much the bluest significant county in Wisconsin, and Ozaukee County for a long time was the reddest, but they had a lot in common demographically. So obviously demographics doesn't determine everything. Yeah. I mean, you have to look at, you mentioned political culture. I mean, obviously it sort of makes sense that the suburbs around Madison are going to be pretty liberal, given the presence of state government, the presence of the university, the kinds of, you know, industries and businesses that spin off of having the university there. It, you know, when you think about it, it makes sense that those suburbs are blue and getting increasingly blue.
And so what has been kind of the main, I guess, the main thesis from what, looking at data from the last 30 years, have you summed up as far as what's changed?
Yeah, so what's changed is, for a long time, you know, the suburbs were kind of spinning apart in Wisconsin. For example, you know, the blue suburbs around Milwaukee and Madison were just getting continuously bluer. And the WOW counties, you know, the three Republican suburban counties, were getting redder and redder in relation to the rest of the state. This was going on from in the 1990s and the 2000s and into the 2010s. And then about 8 years ago, after the 2014 election, you know, we're kind of talking about 2016 to 2023. You could sort of call that the Trump era if you want to. Mm-hmm. That trend changed, that pattern changed. And what's happening is now they're all kind of moving in the same direction. They're all becoming collectively, you know, more favorable to the Democratic Party, for the Democratic Party, which means some of those red areas are getting less red and those blue areas are getting bluer. Now, it's happening quite dramatically in some of these suburban communities. Like, the speed with which Ozaukee County is getting less red is kind of head turning. Other places like Washington County, which is more blue collar than Ozaukee County, isn't really changing much. I mean, the Republican leaning suburbs around Green Bay are getting a little less Republican, but not dramatically so. But together, this turf on the whole used to be quite favorable for Republicans, and now it's pretty much up for grabs.
We're talking to Craig Gilbert, who is a Lubar Center Fellow at Marquette Law and was also the former Washington Bureau Chief and National Political Reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, about his most recent article about the changing, evolving suburbs of Wisconsin and their voting habits. And I guess, and I don't know if the data you looked at tells you this, because what you just said, as far as if there is one trend, it is that the suburban areas are getting bluer in varying degrees. But how much of that is the makeup and the attitudes changing of the people who are living in these areas, right, versus the the Republican Party changing?
So I think we have examples of both. Okay. I mean, if you think about, again, the growth of the Dane County suburbs, a lot of new people coming in, they vote Democratic. If you look at some of the, even the inner suburbs north of Milwaukee, some of these suburbs have really changed a lot over time. They used to be actually red, and now some of them are really, really blue. So clearly the composition of the electorate in some of these places, in some suburban communities, are getting more racially diverse, and that's having an impact on how they vote. But then when you look at, you know, when you look at the WOW counties and you look at parts of Waukesha and Ozaukee County, where the changes we're talking about, this sort of trend of getting less red, has been so dramatic so recently that it can't be explained through population shifts, because the population hasn't changed enough, mm-hmm. you know, to cause an area to go from, you know, plus 35 Republican to plus 15 Republican in a few years. So I look there. I mean, the most sort of persuasive explanation there for me in these cases is people are reacting to the parties and they're reacting to changes in the parties. And obviously the biggest change sort of in the partisan landscape in this period of time we're talking about has been sort of Donald Trump and the image of the Republican Party being so closely connected to Donald Trump. And just as that has made the Republican Party more attractive for some rural voters, it's making it less attractive for some suburban voters.
And because that's what I think is so interesting of, like, how much does this still, especially when we see like the 11-point win in April for Judge Janet, how much does that hinge on just that one issue versus, you know, the same people in the WOW counties who gave Scott Walker decidedly, like, very much put him in the office, you know, also then voted for the person who could undo Act 10. And so is it, like you said, like the reaction to the party, or is it's kind of this one big issue that is floating over our state so long as we have a 1849 criminal abortion ban?
Yeah, so abortion is a big deal. And obviously it's, you know, it is certainly a significant part of the dynamic when you look at, you know, post-Dobbs, you look at the 2022 November election and you look at the 2023 spring election. Abortion is definitely a real, very real part of the story, and it's going to be a very real part of the story going forward. On the other hand, if you look at these trends, when you step back and look at them over a longer period of time, and you look again, sort of go back to the erosion of Republican strength in these Republican suburban counties, that began well before Dobbs. I mean, the sort of 2014 election, Walker's final victorious election, was sort of the high water mark. 2012 presidential and 2014 governor, kind of the high water mark for Republican strength in the WOW counties. And then, you know, it changed, and it started changing with the 2016 presidential election. Then it continued in the 2018 midterms, and it continued in the 2020 election. And so that all happened before Dobbs. You could say it maybe happened for some related reasons. And obviously the Dobbs decision is in its own way a legacy of the Trump presidency.
Absolutely. We got to go to a break really quickly, Craig, but we're going to still be here with Craig Gilbert when we come back. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
What's buried in the back pages was on the front just yesterday. And old news never dies. No, they say it just fades away. Crime and murder, business and politics and international strife. It's all the same, find someone to blame.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. The Army National Guard responds to disasters such as wildfires and floods. They protect us with missile defense, cybersecurity, and civilian support teams for chemical, biological, and radiological hazards. Be there for your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard, aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
What's your favorite thing about a good movie? What makes the perfect song? And what's it about the first lines of a book that will snatch our attention? If these questions intrigued your artsy interest, you don't want to miss Director's Cut on WFHR every Sunday night from 8 to 9. Your WFHR program director, James, and head of production, Seth, will be diving into the local arts and entertainment, hot topic movies, hidden gems, and more. Audience feedback and requests are encouraged for this fun and open conversation about art in all its forms. It's artists supporting artists in their own words.
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? By their clothes, their age, the way they speak? Would you notice an 8-year-old girl who's not excited for summer break
because she may not be having lunch again until September?
Or a single father of two who works
three part-time jobs and still can't put enough food on the table?
Or maybe a mother who cleans offices at night,
hoping to find meeting leftovers to take home to her hungry family?
Or a war veteran who's having a hard time
landing a job and getting back on his feet?
I am the one in eight Americans who struggle with hunger. People you pass by every day but never knew were hungry. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America, 200 Food Banks Strong, and the Ad Council.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news, talk, and sports is 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
Trusting people, they know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. Or I meet politicians.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. We are joined by Craig Gilbert, who is the a Lubar Center Fellow at Marquette Law School and was the Washington Bureau Chief and National Political Reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel for a very long time. He's a chronicler of close elections in Wisconsin. And so we're talking about the changing voting habits of the suburbs. And I guess with everything you've kind of documented and analyzed with the data, if I were a political operative or campaign manager of either party, run up to next year, what should people be taking from this change or this data as far as the approach to continue to try to win statewide elections in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so the first thing is, I think from the Republican side, it's going to be very hard to win statewide elections consistently unless you can stop the slide in the suburbs, because there's just, I'm not sure there's enough votes in rural Wisconsin to keep offsetting these growing deficits in the suburbs. And I'm not sure the inroads are there in urban Wisconsin to offset whatever, what the suburban losses have been. So I think you have to stop the slide. Now, what does that mean?
Yeah.
That could mean a lot of different things. I mean, it could be sort of dealing more successfully with the issue of abortion. I think more broadly, it means probably, there's a lot of talk on the Republican side about kind of moving on from Trump, about, kind of a post-Trump Republican Party. That's going to be very tricky. But if your diagnosis is that Trump is hurting the party with these voters, you have to kind of come to grips with that. And whether it's finding the right candidates or whether it's, somehow changing the image of the party in these areas while retaining your support, in the Trumpier parts of the state, that's a real trick. And it's not easy to do. It takes some real skilled political leadership to pull that off.
And it seems too, Craig, like the GOP is in a real sticky spot when it comes to the Dobbs decision, because this has been their goal for decades and decades. And now to try and back away from this and moderate some of the effects of this 1849 ban, then you're just going to tick off all the people that you've been promising you would do this for.
Exactly. That's why it's kind of a dilemma. It's tricky. And in Wisconsin, obviously, you have the added kind of element of what does the state Supreme Court do?
Mm-hmm.
It has been kind of a trap for Republicans. And you know, obviously we've seen the effects in 2022 and in the Supreme Court election in 2023. And it's sort of double jeopardy when you put it in the context of some of these broader trends we've been talking about.
I think that
for when it comes to, like, as far as the campaign managers and the political operatives, I think from the Democratic side, seeing this slide and seeing different communities going from very red to starting to show blue is getting into those communities, knocking on doors and having conversations with the people that they were afraid to talk to 5-10 years ago, because they were like, well, this is Waukesha. It's red. We're not going to bother with the resources. Now there's proof that shows it's not all red. So why don't we try to find some inroads? But to do that, you got to really put yourself into those communities then and talk to them. Now, Republicans can do the same thing. But I think, like what Craig was saying, is that they're about reshaping their entire message right now, which is going to be harder to do, especially when Trump is on CNN as the only guy running for president, seems like, at a town hall, whereas Democrats can go in and be like, all right, we're going to talk to the people instead. You guys can do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. We're going to just have a conversation. I think that's the most important thing they can do, is finding good candidates and talking to the people who live in those communities.
Well, I guess,
yeah, Democrats have their challenges too. I mean, yeah. They have to, and for some suburban voters who are more fiscally conservative, and we've seen in other recent elections around the country, areas where Democrats have been kind of on the wrong side of issues ranging from education to crime in some elections, where suburban voters play a big role, you know, the Virginia governor's race, for one. So Democrats have their challenges. I think for Republicans, the degree to which the landscape has shifted from economic issues to cultural issues, and the fact that a lot of suburban voters are, you know, more moderate culturally, I think that's part of the challenge for Republicans in these places.
So then one of the lines that I loved, or at least the two questions you asked in your article that are a little different than just suburbs in general, but you asked, does participation fuel division? Does division boost participation? Have you been able to answer either of those questions?
I think division fuels participation. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, it's so funny when you go back. I mean, as you mentioned, I've been doing this for a long time, and people used to the complaints of political scientists and analysts about politics were people were apathetic and they don't really have coherent ideologies or points of view. And now we're living in an age when people are really partisan and really political, and they turn out like mad to vote, and that feels like a problem. So all of this stuff seems to go together.
Absolutely. And I said the same thing with, you know, with all the money in this last race. I was like, I know we hate this outside money and how much, and it feels like a waste because it just goes to media companies. But also, we had record turnout, and I don't think you can totally ignore that. Everyone knew there was an election going on.
The people we wanted to win won.
Yeah. Oopsies.
All right. Well, Craig Gilbert, thank you so much for spending time with us today. We will absolutely have you back and follow your work, because it is never boring in the state of Wisconsin when it comes to politics.
Anytime.
Have a great day. All right. Thanks. When we come back, Scott Gordon, publisher of Tone Magazine, will be here when we come back. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
That's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the globe. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press. What a headache, what a mess. Oh,
from Five Points and beyond, from Southeast Wisconsin and
from the hometown of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news talk and sports station.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Childhood
should be the happiest time of life. But for many children living in poverty with blindness, facial deformities, and other crippling conditions, it's riddled with pain, rejection, shame, and isolation. At Mercy Ships, we're answering the cries of some of the world's most forgotten children and adults through free, life-changing surgeries, surgeries that turn despair into hope. These once heartbroken boys and girls, and many men and women too, are now restored, accepted, and on their way to a life of opportunity and joy. No one can change the world on their own, but together we can transform it by restoring hope to one person, one child at a time. Volunteers from your community and around the globe are bringing life-changing healing and hope to the forgotten poor. To learn how you too can help change the world, one child at a time, go to mercyships.org today.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I think the advice I would give is you don't need to know all the answers. The craziest thing was believing that your dad knew everything. So as a dad, you felt like you had to know everything. You had to get everything right. It's okay to make mistakes. As long as it's coming from love, then, you know, it kind of starts to work itself out. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
We all make promises, big and small, tested over time and distance, tried by circumstances and decisions.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
I do solemnly swear to bear true faith and allegiance.
To help you when you're in need.
To tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
To be considerate and caring, courageous and strong.
For better.
For worse.
In sickness and in health.
To love and cherish.
To be your loving, faithful friend.
Partner.
Child.
Parent.
Neighbor.
One of our most important commitments is to support our nation's veterans. Learn how you can help a veteran going through a difficult time by visiting MakeTheConnection.net.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know. Last October, the Marshfield community lost a 16-year-old boy to fentanyl poisoning. Cam Kirschbaum was an avid skater, and friends and family created a wall of flowers and artwork at the skate park to celebrate his life. The city of Marshfield is replacing the graffiti with colorful artwork to remember Cam and help bring awareness to drug abuse and mental health. Councilmember Michael Riley is spearheading the project. It will feature an illuminated concrete wall at the skate park entrance with painted murals on both sides. A memorial bench and 25 pieces of artwork on the fence surrounding the perimeter will also be included. O'Reilly wants to include artwork created by community members with the goal to remind youth who use the park to make healthy choices and remember Cam. In sports, the Brewers beat the Cardinals last night 3-2. The rubber match is tonight. I'm Melissa Kay for Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Lows dip down to about 42 overnight under partly cloudy skies, winds out of the southeast 5 to 10 miles per hour. A mix of clouds and sun tomorrow, high of 74. Scattered thunderstorms likely tomorrow night, lows around 50, cloudy. Chance for scattered rain showers Friday with highs in the low 60s, mainly sunny Saturday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 52.
I'll be so fun to actually finally meet you in person.
Yeah, but nice not in person. To meet you. Thanks for having me.
Face to face. So you was this last week? This month? This month you published this article.
Yeah, May 1st.
May 1st. So you published. It's Wisconsin's local governments need to unapologetically bring the war on preemption. And you basically are saying that now with Protasiewicz's election and win, that one of the things Democrats need to do is challenge the outrageous attack that we've been living under on local government. Is that a fair summation?
Yeah, more or less, you know. And I mean, a lot of the things I'm talking about, of course, were passed, you know, were implemented under Scott Walker. Mm-hmm. You know, there was just this raft of preemption laws that the legislature rammed through to, you know, stick it to cities and more liberal areas. But you know, there are things that predate that that are preemptions that I, you know, I think we should also get rid of. I mean, there's stuff I talk about in the story that that Jim Doyle signed. So it's sort of like rolling back some of the things of the Walker era would be nice, but also, you know, a general reset for how local governments are able to address their problems.
So let's
if
they want to. But so I said this is because actually, like, reading your article and when you put out the whole list is actually pretty powerful as far as in like kind of thinking of them as one-offs. So this is what you included. Wisconsin's local governments currently cannot enact tighter regulations on landlords and rental properties than what is already provided in state law. They cannot enact rent control, period. They can't set minimum wages higher than the state minimum wage at $7.25 an hour. They're barred from creating all sorts of other local protections for workers, including requirements for overtime pay and benefits. They're essentially prohibited from creating public broadband services that have any hope of competing with private monopolies. They can't ban plastic bags. They can't regulate Lyft or Uber. They can't raise property taxes beyond state imposed limits. Even the state's shared revenue system for municipalities puts them in a bind. No local gun laws. And then just recently, they've proposed new limits on local government's authority to regulate energy sources, a ban on guaranteed income programs like the one happening in Madison that they're currently piloting. And in 2021 proposal was the penalized cities that cut funding for police. And so when you put it all together, like, I think, because I also think there's stuff with like surface lots and how much the city can charge for like parking, because I remember in Milwaukee, we've always been thinking, like, how can Milwaukee raise more revenue? And it's like, nope, the state actually controls that too. And so, like, how did we get here? And do you think the average resident realizes that it's not like this in other places?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like we were saying, I mean, part of it was the, you know, was the Republicans having control over the legislature and, you know, Scott Walker being in office for all that time and them getting to just blow through this gigantic wish list of right-wing policies. You know, I think one thing that I link back to in the story is a Journal Sentinel story from 2019 that is really great and something I've ended up kind of looking back to a lot recently, and it's all about the, you know, the landlords who serve in the Wisconsin legislature, including but not limited to Robin Voss, who, you know, are passing, who have, you know, created all these laws that benefit landlords and essentially benefit themselves. And there's a great part in the piece that says, call it the landlord's legislature. And it's something I'd recommend reading because it's just great context. But it's something that I've been thinking a lot about here in Madison because we are dealing with really a crisis in rental housing and just housing in general. You know, the city needs to create more housing units. Rents are really squeezing people. It was a huge, you know, central issue in our latest local election, which I talked about a bit last time I was on your show with Dan Schaefer co-hosting, guest hosting, sorry. And I think part of it, you know, especially with the, you know, all the rental preemption stuff is that it, you know, impacts people who are considered like, you know, negligible or powerless in a lot of contexts, right? You know, I mean, even on the local level, when there's debates over housing, you know, there's all kinds of mechanisms that tend to give people who own their homes a lot of political clout compared to people who rent. I mean, so part of this is just like it affects, you know, poor renters and even not so poor renters. But, you know, and I think another thing is that we're just so kind of demoralized by all of this that people have kind of lost sight of the fact that like something better is, you know, is possible. And, you know, when I talk about the war on preemption. I'm talking about something that should happen. And I'm not so sure that it will, or if this is something that people are focusing a lot of energy or attention on who are actually in power. You know, we had the Cap Times ran a great cover story today by Allison Garfield that's all about why rents are going up in Madison. And the way that officials in the story talk about it, you know, is that, you know, all we can really try to do is build more housing, which is something that needs to happen anyway, mm-hmm. create more, you know, subsidized and public housing. And there isn't really a lot of talk about, like, well, let's go to the state and try to get some of these things lifted so that we have more options, you know, and more tools. So, I mean, that sense of kind of like resignation and, oh, we're kind of in a bind with this, is, you know, kind of understandable with the way that things have gone in this state and in this country, but is, you know, not productive at a certain point.
We're talking to Scott Gordon, who is the editor-in-chief and publisher of Tone Madison, which is a website covering culture and politics in Madison. But so much of this article, I know you speak from a Madison point of view, but certainly we've had different journalists who cover landlords and some of the pervasive like exploitation that happens in Milwaukee. And I know affordable housing everywhere in Wisconsin is an issue right now. And as we have this like shared revenue battle of kind of back against the wall, like either take it or leave it, potential situation, like I think it was really important to highlight this as far as it doesn't have to be this way. And so I guess with in writing this and kind of referencing a turning point being with Proto Sewitz, who will be inaugurated in August, is it hinged on like being able to push back on like preemption like this or what you're calling for? Is it hinged on new maps, or is there also legal routes to challenge some of these things that have nothing to do with the maps?
Well, I would argue, and I, you know, didn't get super into the weeds with legal strategy in this piece because that's really not my kind of area of expertise. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of more getting into like what I want people to do with the power that they have, you know. But I would argue that with some things, the Wisconsin Constitution, while it does give the state legislature pretty broad power to, you know, pass preemption laws, it also talks about local governments having the ultimate kind of having some power in their own affairs, of course. And it says, you know, the legislature has the ultimate power when it comes to matters of statewide concern. And when you think about that, that is really broad terminology, you know, and you could kind of fudge it to argue that anything is statewide. So, you know, could the courts kind of say like, hey, the legislature has to apply this idea of a statewide concern in a way that's a little less indiscriminate? You know, I mean, someone saying like, oh, Madison has too many regulations on landlords, or, you know, or this city, we don't want them banning plastic bags. I think it's a bit of a stretch to call that a matter of statewide concern. So yeah. That's one aspect. And I mean, the other thing is, like, you know, if anything is, if we learned anything the last, you know, 10 years or so, it's that if the Wisconsin Supreme Court wants to be just really brazen and political about things, it can kind of just do what it wants. And, you know, maybe, you know, I think, I mean, there's a point where people are going to have to, like, if we're going to like push back against, you know, all the different specific policies that, you know, Republicans have rammed through in Wisconsin, and, you know, all the, you know, problems that they created with, you know, just sort of the erosion of democracy. And if we're going to push back against this like broader, you know, rise of, you know, kind of fascism in America, then people are going to have the stomach to kind of use their power in a way that's a little more brazen to push back against this, you know, this kind of stuff. I just don't see sitting around and waiting for all of the parties involved to like just kind of follow the rules and be polite at some point isn't going to work. So yeah, I'm essentially saying that cities should get together and sue to have a bunch of this stuff thrown out, and that the incoming majority on the court should throw it out. And, you know, it's obviously no guarantee of what happens in higher courts as things get appealed through there, but it just seems like, you know, something that they've got to kind of bring the fight on.
And so I guess, because you end it We need to take back the power for our communities. We need to use it to improve quality of life for the people struggling in our cities. We need to do all with big goals, a caring vision, and no apologies. And I guess when you say that, who is we?
I mean, I guess if you wanted to put it in the most idealistic terms possible, then just like, you know, the people of the states as a body, you know, which I know is kind of broad, but just like, but you know, also people who haven't been well served or well represented, you know, especially in, you know, the last decade or so of Wisconsin politics, and in some cases people who haven't been well served or well represented in politics ever. Yeah, I mean, just people who are trying to build something that isn't, you know, restricted by the values of, of the right, if you can call them values.
I feel like, because I've read it and it makes a lot of sense. Like the more, like since coming back and understanding like the list of things we just said, like what cities can and cannot do, and just this like controlling like nanny state of like, well, no, we get to decide because we're in charge. That feels really frustrating, but it feels like it's not top of mind for a lot of voters. And so like, is it become like more thought pieces like this, or like more organizational campaigns, or like, what are like the actual steps to get people like angry and fired up about this, do you think?
I mean, connecting this to things that people are already fired up about and are already trying to rally around. I mean, especially in a place like Madison, the housing issue, there's already been some momentum to make some good, you know, policy changes at the local level that would help, create like more density and create more housing stock. Mm-hmm. I would argue that doesn't go like anywhere near far enough, but kind of saying like, hey, this sort of, admittedly kind of like obscure mechanism that Republicans have used is really important. And I mean, another thing that we've obviously learned a lot about from the Walker era is that Republicans were smart enough to realize that all these sorts of unsexy forms of state government power were really, really useful. And, you know, and they built up their power in that department and then used it, as blatantly as possible. So just kind of, I'm not sure how well that answers the question,
yeah.
But I think it's, you know, it, you can really, these are things that you can really connect, you know, directly to things that are materially affecting people's lives right now. I mean, everyone I know in Madison who is like, you know, scrambling to look for housing for August and dealing with rising rents and just feeling the pinch. I mean, that's a huge problem here. And to be able to say like, we should challenge this so that we have the latitude to do something, to fix these problems, and we should, you know, push our local officials to actually stick up for us on these things.
I got to cut you off against the break, but Scott Gordon, thank you so much for joining us. Check out Tone Madison. We'll put the link in our show notes for today. Thanks so much for joining us, Scott.
Thank you so much.
All right. Have a great day. We'll be back in a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Ladies and gentlemen, children at heart and of all ages,
start your day laughing with Mornings on WFHR.
7 to 10, Monday through Friday, join your host James and the best co-hosts in radio.
Keep up to date on local news, sports, and weather.
Along with Misty's Menu, Birthday and Anniversary Club, and Friday's Culver's Star of the Day.
Join the conversation weekdays 7 to 10 for Mornings on WFHR. We're serious comedy to start your day.
Over the past few years, the COVID-19 pandemic has affected how we live our daily lives. Today, we also face a mental health pandemic that threatens our well-being as we attempt to rebuild our social networks and communities.
The pandemic has reminded us to value family, community, and our human connections. However, it has also left many of us feeling more isolated, confused, and alone, struggling to find meaning amid loss and uncertainty.
Today, 1 in 5 Americans experience emotional and mental health challenges. But many of us do not understand what we are facing or know how to ask for help.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, we understand what you are going through, and we are here to help. Our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all. We work every day to eliminate stigma, combat mental illness and substance use disorders, and advance mental health. If you or someone you love needs help, you are not alone. Please visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
Mama, what does the chicken say? Dog. Cat. Giraffe.
Giraffe, really?
Giraffe.
You're not going to get it all right. Just make sure you nail the big stuff, like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Get it right.
Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Stop surfing the dial. You've found the greatest station ever. Locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Heart, all you really need is heart. When the odds are saying you'll never win, that's when the grin should start.
Now you're getting the idea.
We've got heart. We don't sit around.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. He is Greg Bach. And we got Brewers tickets to give away.
Yes, Da-da-da-da. We do.
This is, feels so fun. Like 10th caller. It's not 10th caller, but you know what I mean? Like that old-timey radio thing of like, you know, you have it.
Is this the first time we're giving tickets away when you're here?
Yeah.
Oh, super
fun.
That
feels so special.
Well, the Brewers will be hosting the Houston Astros in Milwaukee next Monday through Wednesday. And we have two pairs of two tickets. Yep. So that's what a pair is. We have two pairs of tickets to give away for Monday's game. The first pitch is at 6:40 p.m. And a reminder, you can hear the Brewers game if you can't go to the Brewers game on our Milwaukee Brewers by tuning into our flagship Brewers station, Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 FM and 1100 AM. Which is throughout the Fox Valley. Wow. And you can also listen and catch the game on WRCE News from the Center in Richland Center on 107.7 FM, 1450 AM. And so we are going to do, because you are a big Brewers fan.
I am a big Brewers fan.
That is, you don't know who A.J. Dillon is, but
who cares?
You do like the Brewers.
Yeah.
And so I thought I'd let you come up with a trivia question.
Oh, it's...
And so we'll see if we can get someone to. You had an easy one though, right?
Yeah, I feel like it's a. I feel like it's an easy one. We'll see though. If people complain, I'm going to blame this on AJ Dillon.
Blame it on AJ Dillon, yeah, and his new baby
and the rain. I'm going to blame it on the rain. Okay. The question is for two tickets
for Monday night's game at 6:40
against the Houston Cheaters. The Brewers were originally from which city?
Okay.
The Brewers were originally from which city?
844-967-2789. That's 844-96-PARTY. The first caller to get that question right will win tickets for Monday night. And actually, maybe you'll see Greg Bach at the game, because Greg Bach will be at the game on Monday night.
I will be there.
I wonder if you can win these, because we have really good tickets.
Really?
They're club level.
I want. Oh, what?
Yeah. The Civic Media tickets are club level.
Can I just say, hey, higher ups, can I have some good tickets?
I think, well, you have to listen to my show, actually, on the days when you're not here.
Wrong.
And then you can win them.
No, that's not how this works. I get to exploit my connections. Because my friends who work in radio, they're like, hey, you want some tickets? I got tickets to the show. You want to go see a show? Yeah, just give me tickets. Hey. Higher ups at Civic Media. Money, please. Tickets, please. I'm a Brewers fan. I'll do it. I'll go to the game. I'll wear a t-shirt for the radio station. Give me some good tickets.
Okay.
I've got real, real animated about that.
All right. Well, we're gonna keep it open. So what's the question?
The question is, the Milwaukee Brewers were originally from which city?
All right. So if we don't get a question, we still have two more days before Monday. So we can give, if we don't get an answer, then we'll try to give them away tomorrow, or we'll give them away on Friday. But
or
today we are doing a trivia question, because that's the rules for today.
844-967-2789. 844-96.
Party.
There we go.
Yeah.
But anyway, so you're going to the game.
I am going to the game. I don't know what kind of
seats. How many games have you gone to so far this year?
Just one. I've gone to one so far. And so, we lost.
And we lost a lot the other
day. I do not want to talk about that.
Okay.
Because I have a friend who's a Cardinals fan, and the messages she was sending me were so passive aggressive. She's like, I'm loving this. I'm like, I will come to
your
home.
Is that passive aggressive, or is that just rubbing it in?
Yeah, you're right. She was rubbing it in, but she was like, this is really fun. Because the Cardinals this season have been monumentally terrible. Like, awful.
Oh.
This is not a Brewers fan saying that. This is a human who can read numbers. They've been bad. But they crushed the Brewers 18-1.
Yeah, I was going to say 18 is remarkable. I mean,
and then she goes, well, maybe that'll be all the runs we score in the series. I'm like, well, maybe that should be all the runs you score in the month. 18-1. That's just it. I feel like at 15, you call the game. You just call the game.
Like the mercy rules elementary school.
Hey, everybody, just. You know,
do they have mercy rules in professional sports?
No, they do not.
That would be something to see, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would.
Like, all these pros just take your bat and go home. It's over.
Do we think? What's an interesting question? How do you feel about mercy rules for kids' sports?
I mean,
at what age or what level of competition are mercy rules? It's like, too bad. You got to get embarrassed now. Sorry.
I think below high school, there should be some, like, there should be varying levels. So, like, they're little kids. Yes. And it should be a quick death. Just like, this team is winning 20-1 and we've been playing for 4 minutes. Game's over. Get your orange slices. We ain't coming back. But I think in high school and above, no mercy rules. You should just.
So freshman volleyball. No mercy rules.
No, especially volleyball, never mercy. I'm a competitive player in the volleyball.
Are you?
A different Greg comes about.
I didn't know that you liked volleyball. I'm, for as tall as I am, terrible at volleyball.
I sack the bot all the time when I play the volleyball.
Interesting. Once again, we are giving away Brewers tickets. Between now and the end of the show, the first person to be able to answer the question.
The Milwaukee Brewers were originally from which city?
So if you can answer that question, you can win tickets for Monday's night game at 6:40 p.m. against the Houston Cheaters, also known as the Houston Astros. And you can always listen to the Milwaukee Brewers on Civic Media's flagship Brewers station, Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 FM, 1100 AM. And listeners can also listen to the Brewers on WRCE News from the Center, Richland Center, 107.7 FM, 1450 AM. Do we have a contestant?
Mike from Stevens Point joining us on East Coast, Wisconsin. Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
We're doing great. Do you know?
Mike, do you want me to restate the question?
Restate the question.
I will restate the question. Mike, the Milwaukee Brewers were originally from which city?
Seattle, Washington, I believe.
Ding, 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 ding. Correct.
Done.
Congratulations, Mike. Coming in from Stevens Point.
Do we state another question for the other pair of tickets then? Or is just two tickets we're giving
away? We're just two tickets. We'll give two tickets away tomorrow.
Mike, you are the winner. You're going to take me, right? I knew it, Mike. No? Okay. Awesome. Cut him off. He's done.
All right. Mike, don't hang up.
Yeah, Mike, Jane will get all your information for Monday night, but have so much fun.
Yeah,
congratulations.
Enjoy.
All right. Well, then we are going to take a break for the top of the hour news. And when we come back, Rabbi Moshe Stegman is going to be here, and we're going to talk about his organization, Own Your Judaism. And then at 1:30, we're actually going to be talking to Lindsay Rausch, who is part of the Galvin family, who has of a family of 12 kids, six of whom were diagnosed with schizophrenia. And so she has an incredible story, and that's actually what was featured in the best-selling book, Hidden Valley Road. And so she will be joining us at 1:30. So stick around. We still got a lot of show left. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Of course, but keep that old horse before the car.
Who minds them pop bottles flying, the hisses and booze?
What if one day you went to your secret hiding place, you know, that spot that only you know about, and instead of what you came for, you found something a little different? What if instead of your private stash,
you found a simple phone number, 1-800-662-HELP. What would you do? Would you stop and give it some thought? Would you make the call? The truth is, all drug use comes with risk. Before those risks become real, before drugs turn your life upside down, before drugs take their toll on you and your family, know that there is help. You can quit. If you or someone you love is struggling with drug use or prescription drug misuse, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral, or go to samhsa.gov/thereishelp.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.